tuvo un importante rol en la campaña militar para derrocar al gobierno libio el año pasado, no descartó imponer una exclusión aérea en Siria. Un grupo de manifestantes exigió el fin de los embargos bancarios que han provocado millones de familias pierdan sus hogares en Estados Unidos. Así lo demandaron el miércoles antes de la audiencia de Jamie Dimon, presidente y director ejecutivo de la mayor corporación bancaria de Estados Unidos, JP Morgan Chase. El Comité Bancario del Senado llamó a comparecer al ejecutivo por la reciente pérdida de 2.000 millones de dólares de la corporación. JP Morgan Chase ha estado detrás de miles de procesos de ejecuciones hipotecarias en el país, entre ellas las de Deborah Harris. Quien presente en la audiencia del miércoles dijo que peleó por 3 años para que el banco no le arrebatara su hogar. La mujer afroamericana pidió a Jamie Dimon ver a la cara a quienes deja en la calle. Sin embargo, el alto ejecutivo nunca volteó a verla. Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase y Wells Fargo, entre otros grandes bancos, han reconocido numerosas irregularidades en el proceso de préstamos de miles de personas que luego perdieron sus hogares. El director ejecutivo de JP Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon, pidió perdón por las pérdidas de 2.000 millones de dólares del banco en operaciones con derivados y aseguró que los operadores en Londres estuvieron mal supervisados. El reconocido liberal estadounidense Bill Moyers consideró que lo ocurrido en el Capitolio el miércoles no fue una audiencia, sino el equivalente de una reunión familiar de la mafia italiana.
7 miembros del Senate Banking Committee have been big recipients of money from JP Morgan Chase.
Recordó que 7 senadores del comité bancario que llamó a comparecer a Dimon han sido beneficiados con donaciones de JP Morgan Chase en sus campañas políticas.
The bank has been the second largest contributor to Senator Tim Johnson, Democrat, the chairman of the committee.
Además, JP Morgan Chase es el segundo contribuidor del senador Tim Johnson, jefe del comité bancario del Senado.
That's obviously where JP Morgan would be spending its lobbying dollar, would be on the giving to the campaigns.
Mientras el autor del libro titulado Tenle lástima a los millonarios, Thomas Frank, declaró a Moyers que estratégicamente JP Morgan Chase dona a campañas de legisladores del comité bancario.
They also were one of the biggest donors, or their, I should say their employees, to President Obama's campaign in 2008 and also to, I believe, to John McCain.
Recordó que la institución financiera también donó fuertes cantidades a la campaña de Obama y John McCain en el 2008.
This is what we call in Washington the revolving door, okay?
Thomas Frank destacó que en el sistema político estadounidense, empleados del Congreso frecuentemente terminan como cabilderos de corporaciones o cabilderos se convierten en empleados de legisladores en comités claves. La entrevista con el autor Thomas Frank puede ser vista en el programa Moyers & Company. El reconocido abogado Martin Garbus se integró al equipo legal que está apelando la convicción contra 5 cubanos convictos por intentar prevenir ataques a Cuba organizados por exiliados desde Miami. La coordinadora del Comité Nacional por la Libertad de los 5, Gloria Larriba, explica de quién se trata.
Martin Garbus es reconocido abogado en asuntos de defender el derecho en la primera enmienda, el derecho de la libertad de discurso. Y también ha defendido a clientes políticos como Nelson Mandela, César Chávez y Lenny Bruce.
En el equipo de defensa de los 5 cubanos también se encuentra el especialista de la Suprema Corte, Thomas Goldstein, y el abogado Richard Clark. La semana pasada, junto a Martin Garbus, presentaron una moción legal solicitando una audiencia en el caso de Gerardo Hernández.
So, in large part, that media is responsible for the very indictments themselves. And then, of course, the media is responsible for saturating the jury pool.
Garbus explica que la moción tiene que ver con el pago que el gobierno de Estados Unidos hizo a periodistas para escribir reportajes en contra de los 5 durante su juicio. Garbus aseguró que el juicio debió haber sido hecho fuera de Miami porque el clima contra los cinco, cultivado en parte por los medios, impedía un juicio imparcial. De nuevo, la coordinadora del Comité Nacional por la Libertad de los Cinco, Gloria Larrio, explica.
Martin Garbus, la semana pasada, entregó el último documento para el caso de Gerardo Hernández, solicitando a la Corte de Miami, Florida, donde los cinco fueron enjuiciados, está solicitando que la Corte ordene al gobierno federal entregar todos los documentos que prueba la manipulación del gobierno a la prensa de Miami. Fue descubierto 5 años después del juicio de los cinco que muchos periodistas en Miami de origen cubano estaban cubriendo el caso de una manera muy perjudicial, y se descubrió años después que varios de ellos estaban en las nóminas de pago del gobierno federal trabajando para la estación de propaganda Radio y Tele Martí. Entonces, eso forma una parte clave en las apelaciones actuales de los cinco. Es decir, que no deben haber sido enjuiciados en la ciudad de Miami, el nido de los terroristas anti-Cuba, y especialmente donde todo aspecto de la ciudad, el gobierno municipal, la prensa, las universidades, las autoridades policiales, todo está bajo el dominio de la ultraderecha anticubano.
En Nicaragua, el Café de las Sonrisas es el primero en el continente donde laboran exclusivamente trabajadores sordomudos. Adriana Sibori informa desde Nicaragua.
En la ciudad colonial de Granada, no todo es conocer la arquitectura. El Café de las Sonrisas ofrece taparse los oídos y entrar a un mundo silencioso. En la mesa, indicaciones. En el menú, figuras y símbolos explican cada plato.
Hemos comido estupendamente, todo estaba muy rico, pero además nos llevamos una experiencia, un sentimiento que no habíamos tenido hasta ahora, ¿no? Yo por lo menos, que nunca sabes lo que puede sentir una persona con una discapacidad hasta que lo pruebas en ti mismo, ¿no?
La pared muestra el lenguaje de señas, así se hace más fácil la comunicación con los oyentes. Aseguran que es la primera cafetería en el continente y la cuarta en el mundo donde todo el personal es sordomudo.
Antes no tenía oportunidad de trabajo, ahora devengo un salario y me mantengo yo mis gastos sin necesidad de estarle pidiendo a mis padres.
En el centro, en total, son 38 personas. 8 de ellos atienden en el cafetín. Se reparten entre la atención y la cocina.
Nosotros queremos que cuando una persona venga, primero tiene que comer muy bien. Primero le tenemos que llenar el estómago, ¿vale? Pero cuando salga por la puerta le tenemos que llenar también el alma. Y el alma es que tome conciencia de que hay un mundo que sabemos que hay sordos, pero que no lo conocemos.
Una situación desconocida para muchos. No existe un censo que determine el número final de cuántos tienen deficiencia auditiva en este país. Y aunque se ha avanzado en educación, el camino tiene obstáculos.
Hay falta de oportunidades acá en cuanto a empleo, metodología, incluso las leyes. Las leyes están, pero no se llevan a cabo y no se respetan.
En el futuro, esta organización, que inició solo con un taller de artesanías y se expande ahora con un café, pretende fundar una escuela de hostelería exclusiva para personas con capacidades diferentes. Arena Siguri, Telesur, Granada, Nicaragua.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Precious. All right. Oppression, it's a session, one more lesson coming out the mouth. I got no doubt that I'm gonna be on the path. How we gonna do it? I don't know, I got no answers. Just a lot of fucking people. Yo, my spine is cancer. I got a lot of heart, I got a lot of soul. And if we step outside, I might even have to go smoke a whoa. I'm not gonna talk about that, cause like a fucking hot hat, my top hat got snatched by the Mad Hatter. And then we're gonna go fucking chit chatter. And all my folks, get up and fucking put your rice on a platter and be proud as you eat your tamales. Don't forget about the frijoles and don't forget about the tortillas. Yo, my fucking Pancho Villas, where you at? My zapatos, por favor, take off your hat. Do whatever the hell you need to. Fucking step up, yo. Fighting oppression's been going on for 513 years, yo. Thank you. Yeah, I got a show every Monday night, 101.1. Yeah, check it out. Augusto Cesar Sandino Segundo, Paz.
It might have been Camelot for Jack and Jacqueline, but on the Che Guevara highway, filling up with gasoline. Fidel Castro's brother spies a rich lady who's crying over the luxury's disappointment. So he walks over and he's trying to sympathize with her, but he thinks that he should warn her that the third world is just around the corner. The Soviet Union, a scientist is blinded by the resumption of nuclear testing, and he is reminded that Dr. Robert Oppenheimer's optimism fell the first hurdle. Cheese pavilion, and the only noise I hear is the sound of someone stacking chairs and mopping up spilled beer, and someone asking questions and basking in the light of the 15 fame-filled minutes of the fanzine writer. Mixing pop and politics, he asks me what the use is. I offer him embarrassment and my usual excuses, while looking down the corridor out to where the van is waiting. I'm looking for the Great Leap Forward. Sales are organised and pamphlets have been posted. Even after closing time, there's still parties to be hosted. You can be active with the activists or sleeping with the sleepers while you're waiting for the great leap forward. One leap forward, two leap back. Will politics get me in a sack? Waiting for the great leap. Blacklist, I wanna be on it, waiting for the great leap forward. Well, it's a mighty long way down rock and roll from top of the pops to throwing it down. You're waiting for the great leap forward. If no one out there understands, start your own revolution and cut out the middleman. The great leap forward. Perfect world, we're all singing tune, but this is reality. Skip the road. The great leap forward. So join the struggle while you make the revolution. It's just a t-shirt away.
The great leap forward. kill. Just to kill. Drinks flow. People forget. The big wheel spins.
And welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
And welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
Yeah, I said that. Oh, dear, I'm getting echoes all over the place. Give me a break. Anyway, welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. This is the, gosh, today is the 14th of June. Boy, it's Thursday. Just came from a hearing where activist attorney Ed Fry and homeless activist Gary Johnson were refused their appeal of their six-month jail sentences for protest sleeping outside the county building from 2 years ago. And I'm going to be hopefully playing some tape from that. But I'm going to begin the show with some video, which you can't see, but the audio track, hopefully you can hear, from the sex worker solidarity protest against the HEAT conference in Oakland. A little of the background of this is you can find this on East Bay Indie Media. Similar to how law enforcement-centric policies and the war on drugs contribute to more social harms than good, the burgeoning anti-sex worker industry further criminalizes and marginalizes those already struggling to survive while largely ignoring the root causes of sexual exploitation. In what might have been the first action organized against an anti-trafficking conference in the U.S., Occupy Patriarchy initiated a protest on June 13th targeting the 2012 National Human Exploitation and Trafficking Conference on its opening day in Oakland. Protesters rallied and spoke outside of the conference before attempting to gain entry, thereby making their presence known with the use of an air horn through the main entrance of the convention center. A small army of convention center employees forced the doors closed, including two that physically shoved demonstrators away from the doors. Oakland police, who had been apparently laying in wait in anticipation of the protest, rushed up to defend the metal barricade surrounding the main entrance to the convention center. Demonstrators then marched to Broadway, up Broadway to 14th, before briefly returning to the convention center and dispersing of their own accord. At least one arrest was made after the demonstration concluded when Melvin of Occupy Oakland's Tactical Action Committee was snatched by police on a side street. His arraignment is set for Friday at 2 p.m., I guess. It's coming up tomorrow. For more photos and information about the demonstration, you can go to Sex Workers Solidarity Activist Protest, and there's a website, and there's a video, which video am I going to play here? Let's
hear some of the sex worker solidarity protest, and then hopefully get into some more local issues here on Free Radio. And we'll go with that. And here's where we go.
I'm going to read a statement that was written by a number of people in Occupy Patriarchy. Okay, so this is a quote from Emi Koyama, a sex worker and activist, starting with the quote. Human trafficking is modern-day slavery. Many of its victims are women, queer, trans, and children. If so, why should a feminist have to confront the movement against human trafficking? Let me be clear that human trafficking is a serious problem in the United States, and we need to do something about it. However, with its increasingly sensationalistic focus on domestic minor sex trafficking, the anti-trafficking movement we see today in the U.S. is primarily a Christian fundamentalist movement with police, prison, immigration enforcement, counterterrorism, and other law and order interests piggyback on it.
Yes!
From Emi Koyama. The new conference organizers claim that their intention is to combat the sex trafficking of children and to find, quote, solutions to, quote, respond to children coerced into sex work in order to, quote, stop human exploitation and trafficking. We are here to expose that blatant lie in this claim. The official police-sanctioned campaign to combat the commercial sex trafficking of children is nothing more than a patronizing patriarchal guise that is being used to support intensified repression of sex workers and the further empowerment of police agencies at their expense.
Yes, that's right.
This conference is actually a launching pad for measures that will increase policing, such as national coordination of police surveillance. We all love that, don't we? And a police surveillance and the introduction of a ballot initiative coming to you this November to further criminalize prostitution in California, as though it wasn't already quite criminalized enough. This is yet another instance of police and the criminal justice system colluding for increased policing in places where sex work takes place under the false pretense of concern for the most exploited people in society as a cover. And this is another quote. We put an invitation out on Facebook, and we got, like, masses of responses. Before the trolls came in, there was actually quite an interesting dialogue, and many people who worked as sex workers contributed, so there's a number of quotes from that here. Policing leads mostly only to more harm in youth's lives. As someone who turned tricks as a 17-year-old in order to save the money necessary to escape an abusive relationship with someone who actually did sexually assault me, I would like to remind everyone that the reasons that people go into the sex industry are diverse and complex. There are differences between children and minors, and we need to talk about their participation in the sex industry in different ways. In any case, however, further criminalization leads to a more organized crime, which is the source of an overwhelming amount of violence in the sex industry. This is a quote by a woman who was moved to comment on our invite on Facebook.
I don't think that person is a woman, actually.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. The person. Did I say woman? Sorry.
Yeah,
slip up.
I think
up.
That person is trans, but it's definitely
trans.
Not a woman. And
sorry.
You can't be calling them a woman in public.
I apologize. Ultimately, no form of work is truly consensual given the conditions of work under capitalism. We all have to sell our labor to survive, but the conditions of sale are not equal for all of us. For some people, sex work is just a better choice given the poverty of viable alternatives. It is only thanks to the power of religious institutions and their policing of morality that the spotlight gets shown onto those of us who labor physically in the bedroom. We reject any moral policing of our bodies. Clearly, human trafficking is a heinous practice, but the perpetual focus on sex is uncritically sensationalist, and its shock value is exploited by anti-sex trafficking groups present at the HEAT conference in pursuit of their own moralizing, often religious, agendas. Forced labor and human trafficking is a problem not only in the sex industry, but in all forms of work. Many people are forced to migrate to labor clandestinely or to engage in forms of labor they might otherwise never agree to. Often this means performing dangerous or damaging physical labor. The problem of human trafficking includes people who work in construction, hospitality, or agriculture, who also find themselves at the mercy of rings of exploitation. But the organizers of the HEAT conference are silent about these forms of forced labor. Yeah, if they really want to catch the traffickers, why don't they go down to the port and police the port, which is where a lot of people are brought in from overseas, right? I mean, this is just fucking pure hypocrisy. This is another quote from an anonymous sex worker from the Facebook page. When the Vice Squad does stings, the facade that they come in like... And this is not Facebook page, sorry. This is an anonymous sex worker. When the Vice Squad does stings, the facade that they come in like white knights, capture the pimps, and free the prostitutes is a cynical far cry from the truth, including with minors. Oftentimes, when the police do stings, they will first engage in sexual activity with the workers to bait them in for arrest to get their nice little free blowjob. This shit is common knowledge between sex workers and is some of the grounds for hatred in the industry between sex workers and the police. The police, when a sex worker has faced violence by a pimp or John and files a report, is oftentimes told that their file will not be accepted, that they have the power to use and move our body... They have the power to use and move our bodies in any way they please is the source of this patriarchal dynamic. No doubt many participants in the heat have positive intentions, but this conference is about arrests, convictions, imprisonment, and deportation. In short, it's about refining the state's techniques of repression, not healing victims of trafficking or empowering sex workers. Heat will only lead to greater policing of communities. It will do little to address the conditions that cause people to engage in exploitative sex work, such as poverty, lack of access to education, no hope for a future outside the black market, or the lack of public assistance, or simply wanting a better way to make a living than working a shit, you know, minimum wage job at McDonald's if you have kids to support, right? It will, in fact, cause harm to the very populations it targets. Some nonprofit organizations represented at HEAT provide valuable resources that are otherwise unavailable to support sex workers, such as queer-friendly healthcare. But by participating in conferences aimed at collaborating with the police efforts, nonprofits become collaborators with the violent arm of the state that robs government social programs of resources, and funds instead get channeled into already overinflated police departments and DA offices, which feeds the metastasizing cancer of the prison-industrial complex. Those of us in Occupy know, like, what the effects of millions of extra dollars into the police department does, right? In this way, nonprofits end up alienating the very populations they're supposed to serve. Policing of sex work is, in itself, an act of class, race, and gender oppression. And this is a file quote by Emi Koyama. FBI and local law enforcement agencies arrest hundreds of people, mostly adult women who are engaging in prostitution. Contrary to the supposed purpose of exposing and prosecuting trafficking of children in the sex trade, they routinely punish adult women in prostitution to much greater degree than any other group, and that's the actual fact. These stings and these arrests affect the women who are working in the industry, largely. So I really want to apologize for misrepresenting, and I don't know if you'd like to make a statement of any sort about, okay, I grossly apologize for it.
I can't speak for them, I just...
No, I mean, you want to speak for yourself and about what it means, you know, no, okay, cool. There's some other prepared statements, if any of you would like to step up here or, like, comment either on their experience or how they feel about this or, you know, how we feel about these fuckers in there. Anybody else up for reading something else?
I just have one simple thing to say, and that is that for me, as a trans radical, I see this. I say to myself, okay, so if you really get rid of sex work without changing the other conditions, how are all my friends going to fucking survive? Right. What other fucking work do they have? To be homeless? Out on the street here? Some of them are. Yeah? But I think most of them, I can't speak for them, I think most of them would probably rather be doing sex work. And I don't want to see these laws expand and expand so that my entire communities are criminalized. And I think that goes for a lot of people who are in communities where their friends, their chosen family, their bio family are doing sex work.
Hi, I'm from the U.S. Prostitutes Collective, and I'm really glad to be here today because we're thrilled that this is taking place. I mean, I think this could be the first time there's been a protest outside a big anti-trafficking conference like this, and they go on all the time around the country because there's so much money to be made in anti-trafficking. It's the new industry. that's where everybody's applying to get money. That, you know, the money is going to be exchanging hands in that conference, and they're going to be figuring out how to get more money. And I don't know if any of you have read the Village Voice articles that have exposed the trafficking industry and how much money. I mean, Shared Hope International, the keynote speaker today at 10 o'clock, they make millions of dollars every year. And I wanted to bring a sign saying, how much money did Shared Hope make this year? I mean, it's a funding trough. And, you know, what are they doing? Where's the help for the youth on the streets? Where's the help for shelters? Where's the help for women, mothers who don't have childcare and don't have housing and are homeless? You know, why isn't money going into that? And why is so much money going into conferences of this kind and into the police and the NGOs? And I'm really glad we're calling out the NGOs, because the NGOs are part of the, they're part of the whole industry. They're part of the state, and they're part of, you know, they're not helping people. Most of them really do not. And SAGE, one of the organizations that's working with the district attorney's office to put this conference on, you know, we've had women in our network go through SAGE, and they don't get any help, but they get millions of dollars. And they're colluding with the police and the DA's office in San Francisco in the First Offender Prostitution Program, which is the John School, which they helped set up with the Vice Squad in San Francisco. And the men that get arrested pay $1,000 to go to the John School. And who gets the money? It gets shared by the district attorney, the police, and the DA's office. So that is just corruption. That is pure corruption. And we're calling out the corruption today. We're calling out the corruption of the anti-trafficking industry and the NGOs who are dipping their hands in it and getting millions of dollars. Thanks.
Hello. Fuck the police! Or don't fuck them. So we're going to read a statement that we wrote entitled, Four Hoes, Buy Hoes, Against Heat Watch, Toward a Sex Worker Revolt. Every day we are at war with politicians and police, their collaborators and apologists. Today is unique because we get to do it in public. And we know how to give one hell of a performance. We role play with federal judges. We spank senators with wooden paddles. We massage prostates inside the anuses of lobbyists. We wake neighbors with the thudding of headboards while fucking lawyers, doctors, corporate executives, union organizers, detectives, campaign directors, and the list goes on. Sorry about this. Yeah, it was not a very good mask. Point being, we've seen these motherfuckers at their finest. We are practically on the government's payroll. These poor bastards couldn't give two fucks about trafficked children. And no, they are no good cops. If Nancy O'Malley and Gene Kwan are pimps, then the nonprofits, religious groups, and state institutions such as Child Protective Services, among others, and are their little money makers. In an attempt to hypnotize the public, Alameda County District Attorney Nancy O'Malley, in partnership with the SAGE Project and Shared Hope International, look to increase surveillance, develop sophisticated policing strategies, and raise incarceration rates by tugging at the foundational heartstrings of our lives. Yeah. Violence and exploitation. The state wages war against markets that they cannot manage or profit from. They're not interested in protecting those who are sacrificed to the dark trades of guns and drugs and human beings. But they have much incentive to ensure that those people are rehabilitated just enough to run the machines of their monster economy, paid or unpaid. If they cannot be rehabilitated, they're left to struggle through the exclusion of a life of crime, killed or condemned to line the pockets of nasty bankers who invest in prisons. Oh yeah, suck plenty of banker dick as well.
So that's the first part. Part two. We are unfit for the moralistic duties of citizenship.
the reformist projects of legislation or volunteer efforts. We're not just bitter because the social services and rehabilitation programs can't cure our emotional and economic poverty. We're sick of being pimped by rehabs, abused by police and their justice system. We're sick of being regarded as disposable comrades when we refuse to cooperate with the law. We're hungry for a life worth living. We are great performers, but one thing is certain. They are in control of this shit show. Today we set the stage for something much different. Beyond the legal confines of this circus that is the HeWatch conference, there is a world of lawless ones. Networks of prostitutes and other exploited people exist that attempt to support each other's emotional and physical well-being as well as material livelihood. It is our belief that these same networks of care are more than capable of forming networks of vengeance, such that no John would dare to assault or fool any one of us. Networks of hookers and other criminals so effective in retaliation that police are too afraid to arrest prostitutes and judges too terrified to convict. Through the self-organization of whores and rent boys and parents and divas and bitches and sugar babies and loved ones, we are capable of destabilizing entire supply and demand chains of human exploitation and all the horrors of capitalism. At war with all who seek to manage our lives, against the networks of domination comprised of police, pimps, and officials, toward networks of revenge and communities of solidarity. To the pigs inside the HeWatch conference, forfeit your crusade or else. Does someone else want to come say some shit?
I think we're going to play some music after, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, dance a little bit.
Air Carmen.
Do your Air Carmen, girl. So I'm just going to read a short thing about who is inside the HeWatch conference right now. 61 official speakers are law enforcement agents. DA workers are politicians with anti-sex worker reputations. 39 speakers are individuals, are representatives of nonprofits. The vast majority of this work is directly with law enforcement or politicians, the NGOs, to criminalize sex workers. Linda Smith is inside, who is an anti-abortionist, anti-sex politician, and whose political history includes sponsoring a bill to illegalize sex between minors.
Wow.
Like sex between minors.
Wow.
Okay.
Is this her right here?
I don't know.
That looks like her.
Sage Project? Sage, which has opposed measures for sex workers decriminalization. So they're supposedly a group that is supposed to help sex workers, but they've opposed measures to decriminalize sex work, and they profit from sex work related arrests through running the John Schools, which is what our friend was talking about earlier. Our favorite person, Nancy O'Malley, is inside. She's the Alameda County District Attorney. Daphne Fung, the executive director of Californians Against Slavery, the main proponents of an upcoming ballot measure called the CASE Act, which criminalizes providing support to sex workers in the name of preventing sex trafficking. So those are the fun people inside the HeWatch conference. So I think we're going to play a little bit of music maybe and make some noise. Sound good?
Yeah.
All right.
And that was a video, or the audio portion of a video, about, I guess it was It's posted today on June 14th. Sex workers solidarity activists protest the HEAT conference in Oakland. And HEAT apparently is an abbreviation for what? It's not quite clear yet on this website what HEAT stands for. It's apparently a conglomeration of DAs, police, nonprofits, and according to these sex workers, anti-sex folks with an agenda supposedly against slavery, but actually making it more difficult for sex workers themselves who are struggling to survive. And that's... we just heard that sort of a 20-minute video, and I'm going to be turning shortly to more local subjects. Again, you can find this on East Bay Indie Media if you want to check it out. I should point out that the video portion, in accord with the discussion we've been having, sort of along the lines of the discussion we've been having in previous shows, all these sex women workers, and they're all either women or trannies, who are speaking are... wearing dark glasses and facial covering so they can't be recognized. That is, in essence, masks. And I know we've had a discussion on this about how that's... some people feel that's cowardly or suspicious. And in fact, here I think it's quite, again, an example of when it is justified, because these are people whose livelihood has been criminalized by the state. And they are protesting publicly the exploitation of their work and their criminalization by other well-funded groups in society who are holding a public conference in Oakland. So that's interesting. I mean, I didn't hear all that. I had to dash out of the studio and check out something, but I'm back, and I hope you found that of interest. We've had a kind of a controversy. There's always controversies around issues of prostitution, sex work, and some regard it as a, again, all prostitution as a form of, those who call for legalization of prostitution as simply being more concerned with oppressing women and children, and that's the perspective of some groups in Santa Cruz. Looking again to see if there's anything else on the HEAT conference. HEAT conference is a gathering of police and nonprofits. It began yesterday or today at the Oakland Marriott and ignited a range of Bay Area activists, including social justice sex worker advocates, with critiques including harassment, imprisonment, marginalization, and criminalization of sex workers under the guise of child trafficking, sex trafficking, exploitation of youth by law enforcement and nonprofits working with police to expand the correctional justice structure through economic incentives, resulting in further exploitation and disempowerment of those it claims to assist. Although attention to the issue was initiated by the Oakland Occupy Patriarchy, again, something coming from the Occupy movement, a range of Bay Area activists joined the discussion with concerns about the HEAT conference as well as the CASE Act. It was mentioned a few minutes ago, a 2012 California ballot initiative. Interventions based on juvenile justice system models are widely critiqued from a public health public policy perspective. In 2006, for instance, this story continues by Carol Lai, a report by Oakland's Child Prostitution Advisory Task Force, Mayor Dellums, reported that overall we receive feedback that their contact with the juvenile justice system has had adverse effects, reducing life options for youth and alienating them further into behaviors involving risk. The criminal system tends disproportionately to entrap youth of color in its throes, and the punitive experiences undermine the inherent worth and value of young people's lives. Activists were also alarmed about the upcoming 2012 California ballot initiative, the CASE Act, which has been endorsed by Oakland Mayor Gene Kwan, and will be promoted in the final policy panel at the HEAT conference. I assume the CASE Act is a central impetus for this conference, or at least one of them. This proposed 2012 California ballot initiative is highly problematic as it relies on broad definitions of everything from duress to commercial sex. with a fine of up to $1 million. This ballot initiative represents a new stretch in granting extreme powers to the criminal justice system, once again in the guise of anti-trafficking. The act specifically creates a mechanism whereby police departments will be funded through fines collected through crimes defined through this act. As such, it creates a mechanism whereby the state becomes financially dependent upon the maintenance of the legal schema created, explains attorney Cynthia Chandler. The HEAT conference will be going on from June 13th through 15th, through tomorrow. And then there's a series of websites you can go to. Lost Boys, New Research Demolishes the Stereotype, Oakland Child Prostitution Advisory Task Force Report, already mentioned, and Pedophile and Child Porn Law Enforcement Agents, 2010 to 2012. interesting stuff for those who follow this, whether for prurient interests, educational interests, human rights interests, whatever. Check it out. So, you are tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, and the name of the show is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm announcing it 35 minutes late, but announcing it nonetheless. So, welcome. Call-in numbers here in case you have breaking news or questions about what you've been hearing or anything at all. Make perhaps major donations to help us out. We do have a benefit coming up tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. It's not at 7:30 as was previously written on Indie Bay, thanks to misinformation provided me. Or perhaps they changed the time. Anyway, it's 6 to 10 at the Resource Center for Nonviolence on Ocean Street. It's going to have Angry Samoans, Mental Disaster, Rat Bastard, and a variety of other groups that I never heard of, but you might have. So check it out, because we need your help, your funding, your support, if we want to get these, expand our area of audible transmission beyond the 5-block radius of the studio. I think we're currently at 17 watts. We want to get back up to 100. We need equipment, so help is the watchword of the day. And tomorrow you can kick down 10 bucks or whatever you can afford. Come on in and or come on over to the benefit. Help us out. And you'll be helping yourself out if you are a supporter of Free Radio and a regular listener, because that means we will stay on longer and stronger and like that. So, I'm going to begin with some interviews, which I will interrupt periodically with my own inimitable commentary. My name is Robert Norris, for those who don't know. I'm a local activist, civil libertarian type person concerned with exposing police and institutional abuse, particularly against poor and homeless people, and also against citizenry in general, and having a dialogue with the mayor today. And he is, this Don Lane is our mayor here, or the guy who was elected in spite of the votes of some of us. Don has sent me a response to my latest letter. I requested a follow-up interview. Don was on the air a couple months ago, where he was challenged around his support of anti-homeless laws and processes, laws that constrict comment at city council meetings and elsewhere, and his behavior toward the Occupy Santa Cruz movement, supported essentially the demolition of the homeless encampment, destroying a community center for 100 to 200 homeless people who had kind of a growing and thriving community in San Lorenzo Park with no other legal place to go. Santa Cruz police moved in stormtrooper fashion and destroyed the homeless property there, confiscating some of it, garbage dumping most of it, arresting a few of the activists there on $50,000 bail. It was immediately dropped along with all charges the next day, and a typical example of the kind of intimidation that is being used across the country against Occupy activists. I asked Lane for an interview, and I also sent him a copy of the most recent brouhaha, which has been quite stormy and quite revealing, around the criminalization isn't the right word, the discrimination against otherly abled or disabled people at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, of which Don Lane is on the board of directors. And Don was presented with some serious concerns about one man in a wheelchair who was excluded from the shelter because a woman helped him shower because nobody else would and because he couldn't do it himself. Other disabled or otherly abled people using walkers and wheelchairs who are disabled by federal definitions have filed formal complaints with an activist named John Colby, who's written this up extensively and documented it on the Santa Cruz Indie Media website and written letters requesting the Homeless Lack of Services Center and its director, Monica Martinez, accommodate these people immediately. You might say to their credit, or perhaps running and around in circles with tearing out their hair with damage control once their behavior has been revealed, as it's rather actively revealed through all kinds of documents, complaints, petitions, photographs, letters to federal agencies that fund the Homeless Lack of Services Center. Suddenly Monica Martinez was in spin mode, according to what I've heard from Colby, and she tried to schmooze him to death today on the phone, encouraging him to work with her and so forth. He said he just wanted her to respond to that, whether she would in fact deal with the specific disability concerns that people had, like having beds on the ground floor so they can get up the stairs or don't have to try to get up the stairs, not being thrown out for no reason, and if they're getting having an appeal process, all these kinds of elementary things, having some kind of monitoring process so that clothing is not stolen. And Martinez just apparently went into fluffy mode with him, and he said that's not going to work. You've got to deal with these particular issues. And then she accused him of attacking her. Lane, as mayor, kind of does something similar. I mean, he wrote me back today. He said, the situation, first of all, I sent him this email, which kind of simply reprinted the story that John Colby posted. Santa Cruz Homeless Shelter puts a wheelchair-bound man on the street for showering, is what he wrote. And actually, I'm going to have several of these activists on the air on Sunday if they carry through on what they said they want to do, which is come on the show. And that could happen at 9:30 in the morning on Sunday morning when I have a longer version of this show. But what Colby wrote is, within the last week, I've become the representative and advocate for three different disabled homeless individuals. They all face being forced onto the street or have been forced onto the street. Two, Ron Skinner and Megan Andreas Morgan, use walkers. They were told they could no longer access the River Street Emergency Shelter. This was later confirmed for one of them by a social worker. I called around the Homeless Services Center campus all day last Thursday, scrambling to find them beds. For them, being unhoused means eventually being a crime victim. Yesterday, one of them called me frantically because Steve Lazo, who is confined to a wheelchair, was evicted from the Pauli Loft shelter for another homeless resident assisting him to take a shower. This volunteer Good Samaritan was also evicted from the shelter. This is a clear violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act, Section 504, the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, and the Federal Fair Housing Act. They were not given written explanations nor any appeal rights, denying them due process when being deprived of a federal benefit. The shelter receives federal money through a HUD block grant to the city of Santa Cruz. Now I am the representative and advocate for Mr. Lazo, advocating to gain him back the shelter wrongfully stolen from him. What kind of community puts people using walkers and wheelchairs on the street? This is undeniably cruel, abusive, and uncompassionate. Will Mayor Don Lane show some compassion by remedying this abuse of justice and civil rights violation? And then underneath there's a certification signed by Stephen Lazo authorizing John to represent him, John Colby. He sent this out to a whole bunch of people, including news media, disability rights groups, the Santa Cruz City Council. And he wrote to Mayor Lane, I'm writing you as authorized representative and advocate for Steve Lazo. Please view my official certificate of representation and advocacy attached as a PDF. He's confined to a wheelchair. It is cruel, abusive, and uncompassionate that the city of Santa Cruz would force him to sleep outdoors, vulnerable to attack in the elements. He was evicted last Sunday from the Pauli Loft shelter for exercising his disability rights. His friend, Mia, last name unknown, was evicted from the Pauli Loft for assisting him. in exercising his disability rights. It's inexcusable the Pauley shelter staff would violate the Americans with Disabilities Act Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973 and the Federal Fair Housing Act, discriminating against both Mr. Lazo and Mia by making them homeless for exercising his disability rights. Moreover, staff at the Pauley Loft Shelter violated the requirements of their HUD grant money, placing their HUD funds at risk. Additionally, as reported, the staff person who evicted Mr. Lazo and Mia from the Pauley Loft is a misogynist who has a grudge against Mia. This could be determined to be gender-based harassment violating the Federal Fair Housing Act. Please view the petition by homeless individuals staying at the Homeless Services Center, which I call the Homeless Lack of Services Center, campus to reinstate Mr. Lazo and Mia at the Pauley Loft Shelter and to reprimand staff person Joe for writing up Mr. Lazo and Mia and then evicting them from the Pauley Loft Shelter, forcing Mr. Lazo in his wheelchair to sleep outside at great risk while he suffers from pain from a medical condition related to his physical disability. And there are also incident reports from Megan Andrea Morgan, photographs of him resting, trying to fall asleep against the back wall, the rear of the Homeless Service Center campus parking lot. A blanket is his only protection from the elements. And he goes on greater length to describe all this, which is pretty horrible. And although I would, unfortunately, in no way atypical, because there doesn't seem to be any clear abuse remedy to this stuff. Well, apparently the remedy is to publicize it so intensely that the mayor has to do something, particularly since he's also on the board of directors of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And apparently they put this guy back into a bed the next day, but then they kicked somebody else out of a bed who was disabled and put him in a position where he didn't have a bed upstairs, something to that effect, if I understand correctly what happened. Although I'm not entirely clear on the details of that. And so I'm hoping to get further reports. But as I understand it, what's happening now is John Colby is proceeding with an official investigation through the relevant disability rights organizations and federal agencies, which hopefully will result not only in this not happening again to the three or four or five people he's trying to represent, but will also have the effect of changing policies more broadly. So Mayor Lane was sent all this documentation, and his response to it, although I didn't really actually address a letter to him, I had written him some days before suggesting that I wanted to follow up on a radio interview we did, and he had written me back a week ago or so, saying that he didn't feel it was productive because of my negative attitudes toward homeless people or his homeless program. It's not entirely clear exactly. Actually, I can read you exactly what Lane wrote, although I don't know if it's really worth bothering in a way. Perhaps I'll do it just for the heck of it, because he is the mayor, and you know, it's when mayors make statements, it's I suppose significant. Usually it doesn't mean shit in many respects, but I suppose you can draw some conclusions from it. Here we go. Back on May 29th, I invited him on May 6th. With the following note. Hi, Don, I wrote, we're on a first-name basis. Given all the latest brouhaha attacking homeless people and homeless services, and that's to do with the proposals to cut back homeless services, require ID cards, contract homeless services to not include people who are outside Santa Cruz, a whole series of sort of nasty proposals cooked up by Coonerty, Robinson, and Bryant on the city council. I said, and Lane apparently kind of, Monica Martinez sounded like she was the executive director, sounded like she was going along with this stuff, and so did Lane, but I didn't quite know what his position was, so I wanted to interview him on the air. And so I wrote, given all the latest brouhaha attacking homeless people and homeless services, I'd like to interview you for half an hour on free radio. That would be on a Thursday night, 6 to 8 p.m., or Sunday morning, 9:30 to 1 sometime. Would you be available? No ducking now. And Don's response a couple days later, actually I wrote him on the 26th of May, was, "Hi, Robert. Thanks for the invitation. Sorry I won't be able to join you. I always experience my conversations and interviews with you as circular and unproductive. I believe this is at least as much my responsibility as yours, but whoever is responsible, this is my consistent experience. Thanks again, Don." Which actually is sort of a mild response. I have a caller, though, so I'm going to take the call and interrupt this Don Lane examination. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Is this Don Lane, mayor, perhaps? Hello? Turn down your radio. Speak up. I can't hear you. Oh, dear. Okay. Looks like either a wrong number or if someone didn't want to talk at this point. And so what happened then was I sent Don Lane a letter for clarification. So is this a rejection of any discussion of the issues for the foreseeable future or simply this weekend? And I got a response back. And that response was this. He actually appended it to something I sent out to a bunch of people, which was this long article documenting the abuses against Steve Lazo and other disabled people by the Homeless Lack of Services Center, according to John Colby and according to reports by the individuals who were abused themselves. And Don Lane wrote, "The situation was resolved positively in one day by the staff of the Homeless Services Center well before you took advantage of someone else's misfortune to make a public stink." And actually, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I'm going to double check this. Let's see. I didn't post this story. It was actually posted by John Colby. So Don is mistaken in thinking that I posted the story on Santa Cruz Indie Media, although it's a great story, a very important story, and probably the story that prompted the Monday change, since the story was posted on Monday, and Don's and the Homeless Lack of Services Center policy was also changed on Monday. So my general thought is, although I got to really talk to John Colby about this, is that Lane and the poverty pimps over at the Homeless Lack of Services Center changed their policies in response to this public exposure. But again, you know, he attacks me, but I didn't. The only thing I did was I sent it out to the Huff email list and to the city council, because I think it certainly is an important public issue. In the studio with me, however, is an individual who may have a different view or may have a similar view. That with me is, of course, the inimitable Lighthouse Linda LeMaster. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Robert.
And you probably, I don't know if you read John Colby's online article or the email went out to the Huff.
I had a chat over an hour with John recently, and I really appreciate and applaud and commend what he's trying to do there. And I think it's a kind of a light that's going to help all of the service providers, all the homeless service providers and a lot of other ones in our county. We have a kind of provincialism here that can prevail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, well, I think the point here is to notice the kind of, well, I mean, it's nothing really unusual, defensive cover actions of Lane, not because it's unusual or remarkable or, you know, terribly interesting. There are some people, though, who somehow have confidence in Don Lane. I mean, they like Don Lane. He makes nice speeches. He's been on the board of the Homeless Lack of Services Center for, you know, on and off for many years.
I like Don Lane.
And you like Don Lane. Brent Adams, one of the Santa Cruz 11, is a big fan of Don Lane. You talk to some Occupy Santa Cruz people, and they don't mind meeting with Lane every week, even though he's, you know, he was happy to keep bathrooms closed in the San Lorenzo Park and at the same time complain about the poo-poo and the pee-pee.
I don't think that's accurate, Robert.
It is, I think. No.
I understand you and I had a private conversation talking about how he just stood there and took it when the cops tromped across the footbridge and tromped on the whole camp. Okay, I concede. But Don was actively trying to make sure occupiers had a chance to solve their own potty problems, speaking of stink, as you were earlier. And he was supportive, and he provoked department heads in the city into getting more involved instead of just judging.
You're mistaken about my specific accusation, Linda, which was that he specifically opposed opening the San Lorenzo Park bathrooms that were perfectly available for use and could have been quite adequate in serving the community of people who were there. Catherine Byers tried to open them up, and she could not get anyone to help, including Vice Mayor, now Mayor, Don
Lyon. You hadn't said that. I was just responding to what you said.
No, that's what I said. I talked specifically about Lane and the bathrooms, and that's what I was referring to. So if you misheard me, that's fine.
You didn't say.
Anyway, whatever I said, that's what I just said, and I think we agree. You know, as for your, you know, again, this sort of, you know, this notion that Lane is trying to facilitate things, I think is.
Well, you just disagree with me.
Misguided.
That's okay.
Yeah, I do. I'd like people to see the situation clearly. But anyway, that's like 6 months old. Lane is now saying in his latest email to me that situation was resolved in one day. He took advantage of someone else's misfortune to make a public stink. No, I didn't make public stink. The person who got the complaints and had no other choice but to make it public made a public stink. I did pass the word on to the city council and to Huff members of the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom organization. He then continues, your consistent effort to discredit people who do more every week to provide tangible help to people in need than you have provided in your entire lifetime is truly unfortunate. This is a breathtakingly false statement on a number of accounts, but you know, why defend oneself against politicians who are in defensive mode? It is so sad that someone so committed to helping homeless people has done so little. If you'd like to have a more positive impact in people's lives, I can recommend many organizations you can support. In the meantime, until I can identify some public good from my spending any more time with you, I will not be doing so. In other words, he's clamming up on the issues that I asked him to comment on.
He's repeating what he told you in the email you read before, that he doesn't want to talk to you on the radio until he has a different opinion of you, I think.
No, he's a bit. He's denouncing me. Previously, he was saying he had a difference of opinion with me and a different perception of how productive it was. Now he's suggesting that the people that are denying homeless people access and regularly allowing abuses out of the homeless lack of services center are somehow individuals that shouldn't be held to account. He suggests I'm making a consistent effort to discredit people. I am definitely criticizing people like Monica Martinez and staff who engage in abusive behavior, but I'm pretty specific about the abusive behavior I talk about. And he is pretty evasive in ever addressing these issues, though they've been brought to his attention time and time again. I respond. Yes?
Evasive? I don't know if he's evasive. He has a way different way of doing things.
No, he's evasive in the sense that for the last 2 years, every time I brought up these issues, he stonewalls, turns away, and doesn't respond to these issues. Issues that are raised.
That sounds evasive.
Evasive, yes. He is evasive. That's at least my situation. I responded to him, and I don't know again if... I wrote him back, the situation at the Homeless Lack of Service Center is far from resolved, as you'll discover in the days ahead. I believe complaints about the broader arbitrary and discriminatory policies at the Homeless Lack of Services Center are going out to state and federal agencies, not from me, I might add, as you can see by John Colby's determined and dogged persistence. The one-day patch-up job hasn't satisfied the complainants, as you probably well know. Your declining a follow-up interview both violates your prior commitment to do so. It also tends to indicate that you are reluctant to be confronted with concerns raised by your weak-kneed response to the Santa Cruz Neighbors Take Back Santa Cruz mobs drive out of town every third homeless person, as well as Monica Martinez's endless evasions, false statements, and homeless hostile policies covered always with a sunny smile around homeless lack of service center thuggery, arbitrary exclusions with no appeal process, contraction of key homeless services like locker space in favor of offices for staff, pandering to bigoted neighbors with no impact zones, and punitive measures against homeless people in public spaces, misrepresentation of their shelter space and policies in court and in the media, which results in the conviction of someone like Gary Johnson for 2 years, a 2-year sentence. Thank you, Monica. You've known about this stuff for years and dismissed it or simply chosen to cover for Martinez. If you have any response other than feel-good coronation speeches and once-a-year charity drives, please let us know. I'm referring to his Project Connect, his once-a-year charity drive. Oh, wait. He had a 10-week forum on homelessness downtown to educate the students on all the wonderful things Santa Cruz was doing for the homeless community, but didn't invite critical activists to that forum as mainstream speakers.
Who did he not invite?
Didn't invite Becky, didn't invite me, didn't invite anybody from Huff.
Oh.
Critical okay. mainstream speakers. I mean, and you were invited, and I'm glad you were invited, but you're not. I've always regarded you as a person who likes to work within the system if you can. Not always, but frequently.
But that's just your opinion. I have a criteria that throws me on both sides of that fence from
right.
time to time, depending on where the nonsense is.
Yes. And you've done good. You've done good things on both sides, but as you're doing today, and it's annoying to me, as you know, I hear you, you know, defending someone who I feel really, at least along the specific criticisms I'm giving, is not defensible, really.
Well, he's not defensible from your where you stand, from your point of view.
It's not from my point of view. It's whether the facts I'm stating are the true facts. If they are the true facts, and you still want to defend him for other reasons, I say right on. But you're not. You tend to criticize me for the facts, and then you kind of back off and say, oh, well, I didn't quite understand that, and so forth. You know, and I appreciate that. That, you know, I mean, we all... There's a communications gap at some extent.
When we're talking about personalities, none of it's facts. Now you brought in the issues that Colby, that Colby writes about, and now you're talking about something that would pass for factual.
That actually you probably didn't hear the beginning of this conversation. That's all I have been talking about is Colby's rather shocking expose about what's going on at the Homeless Lack of Services Center discriminating against disabled people. And Lane's response to the email I had requesting he deal with issues and actually previous issues of the criminalization of the homeless being suggested by right-wing bigoted groups in the wake of the slaying of Shannon Collins. Mm-hmm. That is something that, you know, initially he tries to be kind of neutral about it. Then when the evidence starts coming down against his best girl, Monica Martinez, he gets nasty. And he says, you haven't done anything in 20 years, blah, 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 but with me, which, you know, I think my record kind of speaks for itself if you want to look into it. Yeah. But the real issue is for him, he is... He takes specific positions on these issues and has, and most important, it's the inaction that, and his support for an existing institutional structure that treats people badly, that is, and his refusal to respond to any criticism. I mean, you've seen this, Linda, yourself in person you saw it from Monica Martinez on the board, but he was on the board. I mean, he was associated with the board 2 years ago, and you, I don't know if you were fresh from being arrested, or it was before you were arrested at the Peace Camp 2010.
It was before the arrest, before the sheriffs dumped Peace Camp 2010.
But in any case, the issue was being raised by Peace Camp 2010 that at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, they could actually help the situation. They were at that time not responding to requests from people who were sleeping, homeless people who had no place to sleep, and instead were sleeping at this Peace Camp 2010 protest in front of the city, the county building.
And the city attorney had gotten more repressive.
Could be. But in any case, you were there with me and Ed Fry when we went in and said, look, have a cop... Have a person on duty at night who can call and say if there's a shelter space. Honestly admit you don't have shelter at night. Give a receipt that indicates a person's on a waiting list. She refused to do any of these things. Lane refused to require her, discuss this with her, or discuss this with us for 2 years. It's brought up repeatedly to him. And his response was to stonewall, ignore it, or simply back Martinez. So there's not really much more to be said unless you have new information about Don Lane that I don't have.
Well, I was right with you right until that last sentence. You describe a situation. I remember it the way you're saying it, plus some other stuff. But then somehow you jump back to where we're talking about two personalities.
It's not a personality. It is an individual and an official.
What does it have to do with Don Lane? That's
it is
how
an
all
individual.
The shelters and services are run here.
Don Lane is on the board of directors of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. He is also the vice mayor and has been on the city council for 4 years. He has a responsibility to address these issues when they're brought to him. When he does not, he has to be held accountable. That's what it is, and it has nothing to do with his personality whatsoever.
I don't think that's true. But that's, see, I'm another different third personality.
I guess so. Anyway, the thing that that I wrote back to Lane was, you've known about this stuff for years and dismissed it or simply chosen to cover for Martinez. If you have any response other than feel-good coronation speeches and once-a-year charity drives, like Operation Connect, please let us know. Direct attempts to discuss this with you have resulted in little meaningful response. It appears that something like Colby's legalistic approach gets the goods. I will acknowledge you initially made yourself more accessible than prior mayors and opened up your past lobbyist meeting record as well as your upcoming schedule. Your past willingness to appear on free radio before strong critics also showed an initial willingness, at least, to address folks in a public arena where you don't have a gavel and a sergeant at arms to intimidate people who speak for more than 3 minutes or turn their backs on you while you talk. That's something Lane has told people they cannot do at city council. You should also be aware that the lawsuit against the city around repressive procedures and false arrests at city council is coming up for trial shortly. That's the mock Nazi salute case. Changing those procedures and making a meaningful change in the sleeping ban that lets Santa Cruz catch up with San Diego and Los Angeles would be a positive step. Even advocating for such a thing, regardless of the Coonerty majority, would go a long way toward restoring your credibility among those who oppose the criminalization of the homeless, which you've repeedly voted for. If you see any facts you think are false, let me know.
You said destroy? A long way toward destroy?
Restoring your credibility. Yeah, okay. Restoring your credibility. As a journalist, I'm still calling on you to have open discussion of these issues, either directly on free radio or through a taped interview. You're also invited to have a public debate on these issues, either at Loudoun Nelson or the Resource Center for Nonviolence. As one who has made homelessness the poster child of his career, is this too much for you to handle?
I like that.
I ask. Signed, Robert Norris. P.S. By the way, have you done anything to address the apparent use of the Santa Cruz Police Department to drive away homeless people from San Lorenzo Park during the S. Collins Memorial last Saturday? And I include an article on that. And he actually responded to my letter fairly quickly today. He wrote, I do respond to questions from journalists who ask questions without attacking the subject of their interview. I do not feel the same responsibility to advocates who attack people they are trying to influence and motivate. Put another way, I am tired of responding to bullying tactics. And that's the latest from Don. Comments?
You want me to comment on your last one and his reply?
Anything. I'd
rather comment on the crisis in shelter and services here, which John's work is pointing to one example of at the mm-hmm. Homeless Services Center.
Okay.
The Homeless Services Center is like four or five programs, and there's a couple more run by the county at the same location. Look, I didn't use the word campus, just for you.
Very good.
And I think that it's about time that people realize that when it comes to policies for clients having to do with if you're disabled or many other things that should have some rules and regulations when you have to step into a system run by people other than yourself, needs to be addressed. And it needs to be addressed countywide. And the fact that you and Don have some kind of connection, maybe through Monica, to this one service, is at least there's a little flashlight. Maybe John can turn it into a headlamp, but it's certainly not one of those plague lights like the city put on Peace Camp when they wanted to flush out the rats.
I'm quite clear what you're saying, Linda. You want to kind of maybe summarize
it
in a sentence?
I'm trying to say that when you go into these programs and few shelters, you don't get any kind of code of conduct and what the consequences are going to be. And it creates a continuing problem that's been here since probably the 70s, certainly since before the earthquake, that because people are homeless, they are not in a position to say, hey, I have rights. They're not in a position to organize a union, and so they keep being treated.
Well, apparently
this way.
They are organizing, and they're organizing with the help of John Colby.
Yes.
And they're organizing in spite of Don Lane and his apologists. The antipathy is very important. To have antipathy to injustice is really essential,
and that is why
I think it does.
Okay.
But unfortunately, we just lost the caller. Well, in the middle of it. Call again, caller, because you know we want you to call. Our arguments are vital, but in the meantime, it's also important for you to get on the air. So, I think we definitely...
I'm not saying don't do it. I'm saying there's a bigger problem, and that's how homeless people get treated when they go into these things. They're treated like, you're supposed to read our minds. And also, all the employees that work there, because of this lack of protocols that people should be able to expect and would in any other part of lives if they weren't homeless... The employees get to play all kinds of head trips and power trips and other ugly games, and there's no way to even perceive or recognize it, let alone deal with it.
You don't think Don Lane hasn't been aware of this for 15 or 20 years? I think he's.
I feel like I'm the only one in the county that's known it.
When Linda Edwards came forward with complaints about being beaten up at the free meal under Karen Gillette, and Don Lane was a defender of hers at that time. He was aware that the kind of phony procedures used by the oversight organization 20 years ago didn't provide Linda any protection. And
I don't know the details, so I'm
you don't
to
know
take
the details.
I was Linda's representative, like what John's doing for these people from Homeless Services.
And do you think Linda
dealing
got
dealing with another bunch of assaults? Do you remember
that Linda ever got satisfaction in that situation?
The one I advocated for, or the one you mentioned?
That's the one I'm talking about.
Huh.
Do you remember that she got satisfaction?
She got a degree of satisfaction, but like so many institutional things, it was a mixed bag, just like if you were in a parking ticket.
Do you remember specifics?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I remember Paige Smith wanted to be there himself because it was the first ever...
I'm sorry. I asked you, but I realized it's pointless for us to talk about it without giving the public the background, and it's 20-year-old background of people that actually are dead now. But the point is that we do have this caller. Maybe he will or she will be able to help us out. Hi, you're on Free Radio with the bickering duo here.
This is Al Williams.
Hey,
Fresno,
Al.
California.
I'm calling from Fresno about a statewide homeless get-together coming up.
Yes, on the 28th of July.
At
Rodin Park here. This will be our seventh year, consecutive year. Each year is getting bigger.
Wow. Tell me more.
And we invite every city from all across the country, across the country, all over the world, but basically California. And it will be, like I said, on the 28th of July, it's a big event. Those who care about homeless people should be there, especially those who have lost someone should be there.
So again, this is coming up on the 28th of July?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, and this is in Fresno where?
Fresno, California at Roding Park.
At Roding Park?
Yes, right off the freeway.
And what time does the shindig start?
Yes.
What time does it start?
12 o'clock.
And will there be police officers to arrest people who fall asleep, possibly?
I'm the mayor of Roden Park, so I give them that day off.
I see. You're going to let the police go, eh? Will you be providing free lunch? Is Food Not Bombs going to feed people?
The opening will be a Native American ceremony, which everybody who has been there in the past years really look forward to seeing that because it's real Native American, not, you know, other people dressed up like Native Americans and they're from the mountains. And they give a real good ceremony. And if you know anything, Native Americans, they protect homeless people a great deal. And they believe in them. And
So, you say this is happening every year, this get-together?
Rap has been there. Shock has been there. San Jose has been there.
In the past. In the past, has this been something you've been done every year? Is this a new thing? You're just beginning.
It's been going on for, this will be the seventh year.
Seventh year, wow. First time, I think it's the first time I've heard of it, though. I know you had the homeless marathon 1 year in Fresno. And
right.
Yeah.
Jeremy.
Yeah, you know, Jeremy Alderson. We carried that here on Free Radio. So has this been happening every year in July, and nobody told me about this?
Well, actually, it's been happening. In the past, it's been happening in June. This first year, we moved it back to July because it's conflict with too many other events, like graduations are in June. They have the Rainbow Pride Parade. You know, that's a national event. A lot of people support it. So instead of having a conflict, we decided it'd be better to move it to where it don't conflict with other events, especially like graduation.
And again, I'm not quite sure. This is a Native American ceremony. What's the point of this whole get together? What do you do? What you're going to occupy City Hall? What's the plan here?
No. It's a party. It's a big celebration of feet.
It's a party
for those who have continued their journey on through life. We don't like to use the word died or passed away. That sounds so dreadful.
It's sort of a memorial in a way.
We didn't agree on the national date. The dark is shortest day of someone's life because it makes everything so sad. And like when I take off from this planet, I don't want everybody crying and sobbing and boo-hooing. I want them to have a...
So it's a big wake for people, in other words.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting. I remember... Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, you know, I remember talking to a homeless activist. I think her name was Cynthia Kennedy. A year or two ago, who she noticed the every year in December, many urban areas, and Santa Cruz is one of them, has a sort of a yearly roundup of all the dead homeless people, and everybody lights a candle, and everybody's real sad. Mayor makes some comments, and then they go on doing what they did that produced the deaths in the first place for the next year. So it's kind of and this particular year, I think they put up pictures of everyone and everybody's name all around the cafeteria. Mm-hmm. And I think I could be wrong. It wasn't Cynthia, but it was one of the activists was saying she was really offended that she had to sit in the cafeteria and eat next to this sort of graphic poster child display by poverty pimps of dead homeless people. That had very little to do with and attempts to, you know, forestall such things in the future, or I don't know, provide help to their relatives or their friends or people who are out there. She said, if people really wanted to do a memorial, they'd do a memorial or a march every month, every time this kind of shit happened. You know,
right.
Of course, who's got the energy to do that? I guess. And I was struck by that. So.
Well, we tried to get away from that sad tear jerking. Result is bad enough that our people aren't here, the ones that have continued their journey through the universe or wherever they go after they leave here. So we do the Native American ceremony, which lasts about 45 minutes. Then we have the rock and roll band.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like fun. I mean, I don't know.
Barbecue, a big feast. Like I say, people from all over the state have came in the past, and each year it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I guess that's the word gets out. And a lot of people say, well, they got the national holiday on the 22nd of December. And it's cold out there. It's sad. It's a short day. It's all about bad things instead of remembering the good parts of people.
Of course, in Fresno, the problem with Fresno is it may be cold in the winter, but it's broiling in the summer. So, I don't know.
Right in the middle of Roden Park.
I mean, you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't, right? I mean...
We refuse to be down.
Very
you know,
good.
We get our
You're already
get
a
our,
damn, whether you like
we
it
get our bumping ride on and right in the middle of the park. And
While I got you on the line, what's the updates? I read from Mike Rhodes that there's a crackdown coming on some of the remaining, or should I say restored, homeless encampments that have happened. Police are planning to go after them now. Fresno is a place where you guys got $2.3 million. Some people got housing. You established an organization called what? Fuck? What was it called, the organization you...
Pronounced fuck. Free United Homeless Coalition.
All right. Well, right on for fuck. That's what I say. and I know I've got my fuck Santa Cruz T-shirt. What does it say? The Federated United Homeless Coalition of Santa Cruz, which I rarely wear, but I think it's a size or two too small, actually. But you got to give me.
I get them all big.
I want double extra large.
Grow.
So. So yeah, go. So I mean, what other updates are there from Fresno other than the fact that, you know, frankly, I don't know. I mean, I invite people to come, certainly from Santa Cruz, if they want to go to Fresno on the July 28th for the noon ceremony, barbecue, and, you know.
And that's all day from noon until dark, or until.
And but then, of course, they got to go hide out before they get arrested for sleeping, that sort of thing.
Like I said, we there at that particular area, the police really don't bother us there. You know, people sleep there, and that's where when I first came homeless. I went to Rodin Park in 1991 and established kind of like a little community there. And so far, that's probably the less messed with place in prison, I was Rodin Park. Yeah. And about the same, coming up probably within the month, is at the Monterey overpass, there's an encampment there. And now they said they need to tear it down. The city is about to file bankruptcy, but they're going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to tear down a bridge where homeless people live.
Yeah, what I get here from Mike Rhodes, who I was reading his latest update. People can check his stuff at the Community Alliance newspaper website or at in Indy Bay / Central Valley. The people living on the hill, New Jack City, and the area around Pastor Ray Polk's ministry are going to be evicted. Notices will go up in about 2 weeks. Mm. They'll give people 10 days to move. And this is supposedly so this bridge, the Monterey Bridge, can be destroyed because it's a so-called hazard. However, it's not been used for years. It was one of the reasons that they gave for evicting the homeless in October and November of last year. And according to this, Rhodes says he talked to somebody and he said that he talked to Pastor Polk, and Polk is not planning on moving. What's the story with that?
Well, Ray Polk, he set up a memorial there under the bridge, which has a lot of plaques with all, I don't say all the homeless. There's quite a few, and including Pam Kincaid, you know, was the lead plaintiff in the lawsuit against the city of Fresno. And there's hundreds of them there. And he has a little ministry there. And he's not going to leave, so hopefully the faith-based people here in Fresno will support the non-destruction of this particular area. I mean, they don't have no money. They want to file bankruptcy, but until they got hundreds of thousands of dollars to spend on tearing down a structure that's really not hurting nobody except people happen to be living there at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they got plenty of money to make a homeless person's life more miserable, but they don't have no money to put a person in a house.
And this is
the city of shame of California.
Among many, yeah, for sure. Occupy Fresno legal victory. I'm also reading the story from Mike Rhodes. There's an Occupy Fresno press conference that was held last week to share the results of a settlement with the county of Fresno about the 100 arrests that have taken place over the last 8 months for Occupy Fresno. Which Occupy Fresno, has that been involved in supporting homeless people at all?
Well, that basically is most of the people there are homeless people. So, you know, they got to sleep someplace, so they might as well sleep at Courthouse Park.
Well, they're way ahead of us. We can't sleep at the courthouse. That's illegal here. The good news
is send some of our crew down there. And
damn straight. Send them down.
Occupy the courthouse there in Santa Cruz.
Yep. You send them over, and I'll watch.
Put out a call for action, and we'll get it done, you know.
Really?
We fight a hard battle here in Fresno with the homeless issue, but you know, we don't give up. You know.
Well, we may have somebody calling in on this. Let's see who this caller is. Don't go away here, Al. We're talking with Al Williams of Fresno, California, and FUC, the Federation of United Homeless Coalition, something like that.
Free United Homeless Coalition.
Very good. Hi, you're on the air with Al, Linda, Robert.
Been to a picnic in Rodin Park in decades, man. I came from Fresno to Santa Cruz. I love that criminal town. I love it.
Hey, hey. What's your name, caller?
David Silva.
Hey. So welcome. So are you just calling in to give a shout-out to Fresno, or you got some other thoughts?
Yeah, big shout out to Fresno. You know, I was like one of the people that founded the homeless unit in the Medi-Cal food stamp unit, where we took all the homeless cases and put them in one unit, and just three workers and the supervisor. We worked it all, and we really got to be able to serve people, tell them how to fill out applications right. You know, you don't have to lie. There's ways to tell the truth that the application would still be good and you don't get in trouble. Yep. It was really, really quite a good experience. But I'm glad it came to Santa Cruz. 750 cases a month was hard to process.
So that's the kind of work you're doing now, or?
It's good to see you today.
I'm retired now. I retired in 96, pushed me into retirement. So I started serving on commissions. I've been serving on commissions in the San Joaquin and the coast here since 96.
Huh. And so are you just listening to the show, or are you just, how did you happen to call it?
I'm on my cell phone, so I'm sorry for the feedback if there's any.
It's fine.
Finally got my cell phone working up, so I fixed it after 3 days of insanity.
Okay.
It was good to see you in court today, Robert. I thought Ed Frye was beautiful. I to hear the Ninth Amendment, you know, so eloquently protected, it just made my heart, you know, just sing. And then, of course, when you see the judges' gray, lead faces, it makes you cry. But just the same, Ed Frye did wonderful today.
Yeah, I'll talk about that, too. Anything else you want to say to Al, or...
Al, you know, I'd like to try to come, Al. You know, it'd be fun to be a picnic in Rolling Park. And I, you know, as much as I hated working in Fresno, I love partying in Fresno. It's a wonderful place to be.
You know, Al, you had the suggestion that I kind of thought it was half in jest, but if you want to send a squad of activists over here to show us how to do it, And to get the kind of results you have had in Fresno, whether it's getting a $2.3 million lawsuit or taking back rights at the courthouse, I would love to have, you know, to be a part of that. So what do you think?
You know, there's nothing like meals to take the place of workshops. You can get together people around a meal and a theme and just let people talk. And most people already know the answers. We just need to start sharing them. That's all. Get a lot of other there's a lot of workers in the system that, you know, work welfare. And social workers would be glad to take a day off and come and tell you, you know, how people can take over the system. And I think we need to do the same thing with getting the vote out, too. Getting the vote out for poor people, getting people to know they have a right to vote no matter whether they have an address.
Yeah,
or not.
But vote for who or vote for what? Come on.
Well, there ain't much to vote for, but it's most important to lower the percentage of victory. If you lose your vote, you can turn in a blank ballot and lower their ego.
Well, I think it's important we do things other than vote. I mean, voting might be fine one day a year.
I'm just talking about how ideal it would be if we get to the point we could even organize to get out the vote. I'm talking about organized survival by learning how to survive through the system first. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to be head-on, face-on wanting to replace the system with Occupy, then we better have some solutions at hand. I think to all of us get together and brainstorm over meals is the best way to hold our workshops for each other instead of a bunch of egos going to town.
Well, I expect you'll be setting up a meal soon to do that, caller.
That barbecue sounds like I'm going to be there.
Well, that's Fresno. That's a ways away from Santa Cruz, but yeah, so you got one person, Al, maybe coming your way.
Okay,
hey, look, there's a lot of people in Fresno that want to call you. Maybe you ought to put your phone number out back quick.
Robert, you can get my phone number, okay?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so Al, I guess if you email me, maybe we can get the caller's phone number.
They want your phone number.
They want the radio show?
Oh, you want my phone number. Okay, I'm sorry, caller. I think I cut him off. Let's see. Yeah, I did cut him off. The phone number here is, well, he has my phone number. He just called in.
He's asking you to put it on the air because people want to call you.
What?
That's what Al was saying.
Is that what you're saying, Al? What were you saying?
I'm saying other people in Fresno want to talk to you tonight.
Okay, yeah. The number is 831-427-3772. 831-427-3772. And that's only until 8 o'clock. After that, you can get me at 831-423-4833, though I may have to call back because I won't be at that number for a little while after the show. But again, 831-423-4833 after 8 o'clock. That's the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. People can call in if you got, you know, stuff you want to put on the air, or you want to ask questions about Fresno or ask questions about Santa Cruz, or volunteer for Al's hit squad that's going to come over and change everything here in Santa Cruz once you're finished with the festivities in Fresno, Al.
Okay, that sounds good.
And I like the idea.
All right. Thank you.
All right, man.
All right.
So, Linda, any thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I really appreciated what Al was saying, and I'm glad that in Fresno they've picked their own date to do a memorial remembering of people that have been homeless and got destroyed, often because of being homeless. But I want to say something on behalf of why it is December 22nd every year. It's because that's the day that Henry Sims Narrows, then the HUD boss, found a dead woman on the bus bench outside of the HUD building and decided to commit to homelessness and do something about it.
Okay. In what year was that? Do you remember?
No, I can't remember numbers. I'm sorry. I'm a handicapped person when it comes to good memories sometimes.
But I remember
Santa Cruz, the first one we had, and you were there, Robert, and Paul Brundell was there taking pictures with a cell phone of us with a symbolic casket and people carrying beautiful long-stem red roses up to and putting them in the casket on behalf of all the people we knew who were dead in Santa Cruz. And every time I've told that to the people here who continue that memorial, who claim it is a function of a homeless service program, they just laugh at me or ignore me. They act like I'm speaking a different language. But really, we were doing that in this community long before.
Yeah, it doesn't really. I mean, I believe you. I just don't. Memorials, I guess, you know, even memorials for anybody. I guess I'm not much of a memorial kind of guy.
I think we need to remember our martyrs or we get more destroyed
as
the future
unfolds. Well, the best time to remember them is not at memorials, but at activist actions, and that's what I'm interested in.
That's
not the
true.
Once-a-year symbolic horseshit that, you know, it's not just horseshit. But
I try to do the best time and the worst time and any time I can remember. And I mentioned Jane and Linda Jay, and I think it's important that we
but
all
nobody
make
knows
it personal.
Who you're nobody knows who you're talking
well,
about.
Well, I mean in the context of an event.
Yeah. Okay, well, but again, on the air nobody knows who you're talking about. But that's, you know, I think people who've contributed are good. We got to know about them and we got to keep contributing and so forth. I think what I want to do, we had the caller briefly touch upon the Ed Frey incidents of today, which to me, you know, I...
What'd you think?
I'm going to answer the phone. I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to think of it because
oh,
I'm not getting...
I'm on the edge of my seat.
I don't really want to talk about it particularly. And instead, I will talk to you, caller. How are you doing there? You're on the air.
Well, you know, I'm kind of interested in some memorial services. There's times when esprit de corps for the Revolutionary Forces comes from them remembering fallen heroes.
Hey,
I think we should always remember the fallen. And when you die, Robert, I promise we'll have people there.
Who gives a shit?
No matter what you
it's
say,
not, it's not
going to
matter
say,
after
there.
I
we're
die.
Robert, we're going to have such a
have
big memorial for you.
Have people there while I'm alive, man. Please.
I'm trying my hardest, dang.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a kick-ass flu.
Yeah.
You know, I was grieving all the, you know, last year's losses, now another loss. It's kind of hard to get yourself on your feet, but I am on my feet, and I'm going to show up as more and more, and you can count on me to try to do something to make it real, you know.
Well, perhaps
living
you'll
on
be
the street has something about, there's something very special about a real special relationship you have with reality.
So perhaps you'll be at the Free Radio Santa Cruz event tomorrow, which is happening from 6 to 10. For those who are interested, again, I kind of repeat this because we need your money. $10 or whatever you can afford, maybe. I'm not quite sure exactly what the policy is at the door. But it is 6 to 10 at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, the new one, on Ocean Street.
And Robert, could you tell us where we can send our money if we can't go to that or we can't do
you can
loud
always,
music?
I certainly will, Linda. You can always send your money to... go online to freakradio.org, and you'll learn all you need to know, probably more than you wanted to know, about not just where to send your money, but there's some archives of some of the shows of some of the folks. My archives, or the archives for this show, are at huffsantacruz.org, generally, huffsantacruz.org. And the phones are ringing off the hook now. We're talking.
Freak Radio.
Yes, caller, what's up? Oh.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, I'm calling from Fresno. My name is Sarah.
Era or Tara?
Sarah.
Did I have
yes.
A... Hey, Sarah, welcome to Free Radio.
Hey, how are you?
I'm a little tired, a little cranky. How about yourself?
I would say I'm okay, I guess.
Okay.
It's kind of crazy weather, but...
Is it hot there?
Good, I guess.
How is the weather there? I'm in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, it's kind of I don't know how you would say, really.
Is it hot?
Really. Yes.
There you
yes.
go. Yeah, I mean, we're getting that. Go ahead.
It's been lately in like in the hundreds. Over here.
Oh, boy. Well, it's gotten hot a couple days here, but it's... And heat really takes it out of me, I'll tell you. But, you know, what's on your mind? Have you been listening to the show, or did you hear Al?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I don't agree with all the things that have been going on, you know, with the way, you know, the police... You know, around lately and different parts of Fresno, especially down over by the Pavarillo, people have been having their, you know, homes and stuff really torn down by law enforcement and so forth. You know what I mean? Mm. I don't think it's fair.
Yeah.
And I don't find it whatsoever in their part of place of right to, you know, being that, you know, even though they're law enforcement and so forth, you know what I mean? They don't have any internal rights to go and just take a homeless person's place,
yeah.
You know, and tear it down and take it in within their own hands and be as cruel and cold-blooded, you know what I mean?
Sarah, are
even
you... Sarah, are you yourself... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Even God wouldn't do that to his own sheep.
Okay, so, well, you weren't in the Lisbon earthquake, obviously, but yeah, I hear you.
No, but I've been in.
I wasn't.
I've been to a somewhat a victim a circumstance in earthquakes before, so I know kind of a little bit about it.
I think if earthquakes do it to you, you know, it's bad. But I think, as you put it, when it's human beings or people who are masquerading as human beings, but are actually just
right.
bureaucrats and doing some, you know, doing their job and all that
reptiles.
Stuff. You know, that's even worse. Have you been homeless yourself? Are you outside? What's your deal?
Yeah, I'm a I'm what you would say a ex person that used to be, I used to be homeless. So I'm more or less.
Did you get money in the Kincaid settlement?
No.
Uh huh. And how long were you homeless?
I've been on and off homeless, believe it or not. Not very long ago, we were struggling. Me and my fiance were. Struggling, you know what I mean, on the streets, having to sleep out on the street with just blanket, you know, laying blankets down on the ground on hard, cold cement with just pillows, you know, and so forth, and freezing cold, rainy weather. It was bad.
How long ago was that?
Not very long ago, as a matter of fact.
So,
can I ask a question?
Sure.
Sarah, what happens to your stuff when the cops roust people out of their homes? Do they take your stuff? Do they stomp on it and destroy and throw it away? Or do they let you get it?
Yes. No. What they do is, what they did is because we, at one time, we were staying at a motel complex, right? And
mm-hmm.
the people over there, they're totally, you know, jerks. You know what I mean? They didn't care about what the hell is going on with anybody. They didn't give a damn about anybody and their feelings or anything else. They wanted their money. They didn't care about whether if you went without, as long as they got their pocket so they could be able to take upon and, you know, take it in their own interest.
Sarah, the question that she had for you was, you know, I know that under the Kincaid settlement, they're supposed to keep your property and not throw it away.
No.
Are they doing that? No, they're not doing that.
They're throwing people out of the homes.
Yeah.
And they're making them leave their belongings there in the residence. And then when people were to go to try to go back to reunite with their belongings, they would go and have the police come and drag them out and take their belongings and dispose them.
When's the last time you saw this happen?
It happened to me and my fiancé, as a matter of fact.
How long ago?
But it was like about a month ago, wasn't it?
So were you renters?
About 4 months ago, to be exact.
Were you renting or were you in an encampment?
No, we were renting in an apartment. It's like a upstairs downstairs motel. I'm sure you've heard of the name Sahara.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I got you. Okay, well, look, interestingly enough, you know, I'm interested in tenant protection.
Also.
But I
Joseph, listen. Also, the other one, there was one also. The ambassador, we were sleeping outside on the sidewalk, right in the breezeway, and people that were staying there at the motels. Apparently, we're just, I guess, ongoing, coming, going people.
They didn't
you know
like
what I mean?
It. They didn't like seeing you.
No. They
Sarah,
did not
so
like
I gotta,
that.
I got to tell you, I got to move on here. So I want to thank you for the call, and I want to thank you for, you know, giving me your thoughts. If you want to, you know, get in touch again, this show happens, you know, like we do it twice a week, and we do it from 6 to 8 on Thursdays, and in the morning on Sundays from 9:30 to 1.
Yeah.
And so call back if you'd like. But I got to roll. I got only 20 minutes left in the show. I'm going to give you your last 15 seconds, so go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to let the rest of the world know that, you know what, if you're in any internment situation like we were 4 months ago, don't let the police come in and take upon in their own act and take your belongings, because you know what, everyone that is a human being on this earth do have rights, and I just say right on, thumbs up. You know what I mean? High five.
I know
air,
exactly
what
you mean, and thank you, Sarah. You're right. But we got to go on here.
And they're going on in Fresno.
I don't know. Hopefully they are. Looks like celebrations on the 28th. Mm-hmm. And there's other stuff. If you want to actually read more about this, you can go online to Santa Cruz Indie Media. I recently posted a story there talking about angry and hopeful updates from the Central Valley. I was mentioning before this call that Occupy Fresno had a legal victory. Good news is that all charges have been dropped and Occupy Fresno can once again have all-night demonstrations in the park. Unlike Santa Cruz, where not only can't you demonstrate in the park, you can't even walk into the park and sit down on a bench or do that at the county building or do that at the courthouse or do that at City Hall late at night. So you
life has been privatized. Don't get caught in public acting like a person.
Occupy Fresno, the story continues, held a press conference June 8th to discuss the settlement of its suit against Fresno County. Bob Navarro, attorney representing Occupy Fresno, Mike Bridges and Richard Patch Day spoke, and their comments are available. There's a video online if you want to see them and hear them. The settlement is not the victory they were looking for, but it is positive. It upholds constitutional rights of freedom of assembly and freedom of speech. Restrictive ordinances limiting the circulation of flyers, carrying of signs, and holding small gatherings in Courthouse Park will be eliminated, and those arrested will not face criminal charges.
Yay!
Most importantly, Occupy Fresno has not gone away. June 9th is the anniversary of 8 months at Fresno County Courthouse Park, the only known Occupy in the movement that has maintained a continuous 24-hour presence in its original location. So maybe I'm always asking Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs, you know, when he talks about reoccupying and all how the media have greatly exaggerated the death of the Occupy movement. And I say, where in California are there any Occupies that exist? Well, according to this email, and who knows how accurate it is, but Rhodes is... I don't know whether he's accurate or not, but I place a lot of confidence in him. This says that Fresno has been going, you know, for 8 months now, 24 hours a day. Santa Cruz here hasn't been going for 24 hours a day since December 8th. So,
and none of the other occupies in our country are making it. So Fresno's right up there behind.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Egypt.
I think there are others, but I don't know.
Have had a sustained count?
I think so. But I can't.
Maybe I'm reading the wrong article.
I'm thinking of Iowa or some small places where you don't really hear much about them. Led by young adults and beginning on October 9th, several hundred people of all ages joined the movement. There are 105 arrests. Fresno County spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to monitor and arrest Occupy Fresno demonstrators. It distracted and deterred supporters of the Occupy, but the national problems that sparked the Occupy movement remain. Extreme inequality of wealth, accelerating poverty, and the power of large corporations, financial institutions, not to mention their paramilitary backers in the prosecutor's offices and the police departments, which is what I would add there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's some interesting stuff. There's some interesting tenants' rights referendums happening in the Central Valley, which I encourage people to check out. If you want to get on the Huff email list and catch some more of this information, you can. Just send an email to rnorris3, that's me, at hotmail.com, and I will get back to you and put you on the list, and you'll start getting snowed with emails. So we have 15 minutes left in the show. Linda, you look like you've been eager to say something for a while.
You started to say something about this afternoon's
so-called
appeal.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I have... it's always nice to see a bunch of people who are activists who get together to share some common feelings and solidarity with each other, which is what we saw today. And it was an appeal for against the sleeping ban, I should say lodging ban, although it's really a sleeping ban, convictions of Ed Frye and Gary Johnson. That happened before a two-judge panel where Frye and Johnson were challenging their decision of Judge Gallagher in his court. You're going to be appearing shortly, apparently, Linda?
Yeah, I might end up in jail for 6 months shortly if things keep going the way they are.
Yeah, and so, you know, I'm always glad then there's a sort of a solidarity and folks get together. But because we know these people are... The judges involved are going to give no decision other than what they have already done before. And I don't know specifically that Judges Volkman and Maraganda, and those are the two judges today that heard this case, actually heard specifics around 647E, the state penal code, used by the deputies to criminalize and remove Occupy Santa Cruz people, Linda LeMaster, Chris Doyen, Ed Frye, Gary Johnson.
Star.
A whole bunch of folks. Dozens of people, in fact, from the county building in a peaceful, very important public protest to dramatize the fact that people in Santa Cruz have no legal place to sleep who are outside and face criminalization for simply doing what everyone needs to do at night. While it's certainly true that you know, it's good that people get together in solidarity, the idea that they're going to a hopeless court hearing and sitting around in court watching a hopeless process, to me...
What if you were in Gary's place, Robert? Would you feel different?
Well, why don't you just plead guilty then on your charges, Robert?
No. I don't understand your points, folks. What are your points?
Well, it's going to be a useless trial. They're just going to railroad.
It's a useless appeal in the sense that I know those judges are going to make that decision. I'm not saying that...
Of course we do.
Therefore, I kind of, you know, I find a wonder at the energy that we're exerting, whether it has a meaningful consequence. The media wasn't there. Nobody from the Sentinel showed up. I mean, we were all there. We got energized with each other. You know, the judges were nervously twitching because they knew they were full of shit in what they said. I'm actually going to cover this when I have time on Sunday. I didn't have time because of various constraints today, not to mention, you know, Fresno stuff. But, you know, and I'm going to play, I don't know, half a dozen interviews with people, and they'll get, they can give their reactions. And you know, you two are in the studio now. You're free. Mm-hmm. I know you're a long time... legal fighter against the criminalization of poor people. And Linda, of course, you're not only facing those kinds of charges, but you've been fighting them for years as a member of the community, as a founder of the Welfare Parents, a Welfare Mothers Support Group, I guess it started as, years ago.
Well, actually, someone else founded that, and then it went away, and I picked up that name. As we got more organized, we finally had a woman who came in and said, hey, you're discriminating against daddies. So we dealt with that, just like homeless service centers going to have to deal with disabled clients.
I'm glad to hear all this information, and it will be going into one of the footnotes of my upcoming street sheets.
At any rate, they're going to appeal further. We didn't expect to win at this appellate level. And you notice, you were at the trial, Robert, you notice how they had all kinds of arguments for why it wasn't an Eighth Amendment cruel and unusual punishment. But when Ed pointed out that they said that it was a reasonable time, place, and manner, and he said, how can that be when you can't sleep anywhere in the state at mm-hmm. any time? For a time, place, and manner, there has to be an ample alternative somewhere else. they could provide no answer. They sat there silently, which leads me to a lot less respect.
Well, just as judges have sat silently, no doubt, when women said, you know, what happened to our rights, or slaves, what happened to our rights. And so, to me, it doesn't mean much unless you get, you know, a revitalized Republican Party like they had in 1856, you know, and then in 1860, who ran No Slavery in the Territory people, who were, you know, ultimately became abolitionists.
Wait a minute. What are you saying? If we had a
I'm saying
actually supporting the homeless, and your Huff meeting has actually grown in volume now.
We do, but I'm saying that that's why this court situation to me is a sort of a depressing phenomenon. And people and it's also depressing because if you are going to go into the courts, you need to use the court's language, and that is not the Ninth Amendment, and that is not the Constitution, that is not really the real language that the people obviously, you know, grant legitimacy to the government with, because they're these things which they somehow are, they're manipulated in school into believing that these are the real foundations of our institutions, like, when they're not. We have class-based institutions that are founded on sort of traditional obedience, sort of memes that we all go through. And
but
so,
most people, when they hear someone get 6 months for sleeping, think that's ridiculous. So they understand that part of it.
That's true. But they may understand that, but there weren't no sit-in in the courthouse today. And even people like yourself who adamantly oppose it, you rush off to the law books to think about where can we appeal next. And I'm not saying that isn't wrong to do. I mean, it's an avenue, you know, for sure. But, you know, it also, there's an element of futility to it that tires me out. Just as my babbling on the radio about this has its own futility to it.
You feel futile in this position? Futile?
I like talking about it. I enjoy conversations with people about it. I, of course, find the intricacies of it intriguing, whether they're legal or extra legal. And, you know, I
think people have to go to court a lot of different times, not necessarily because of something that happened to them that makes them have to go, to see that this thing you were just talking about, what we were taught in school, our pledge, our so-called civics, isn't what the world really works like. And if you go a bunch of times and you realize it's just a money sucking machine in most cases, and when it actually comes down to something that has to do with our Constitution, you're totally pushed out of being taken seriously. The most serious cases, in terms of how many people they affect, are the ones that are trivialized by the judges because they're so stuck in their status quo mentality.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more, but so what?
So I'm glad there were a lot of people there, because I'm the one that might have to go to jail after they get done with
Ed
and Gary.
Are you going to take the probation?
They haven't said anything to me that doesn't insult my integrity and require me to be dishonest. Yeah. If they
so
gave me some cop out that didn't
those,
require
excuse me,
that
excuse
much
me, guys.
Of integrity,
whoa, whoa,
I'd think
whoa,
about
this
it.
Is a radio show.
It is.
And
well,
most people, and most people,
want,
and most
radio.
People, you can, but I can turn down. So nobody can hear you but me.
This is where the protest is going to come first.
The point is
I guess
our regular listeners know kind of what these two are talking about. But it's you know, so. Within the 8 minutes left in the show, you know, I think what I want to do is you two, you know, made your way to the studio to give some impressions. You're welcome to come back on Sunday and talk about it, too.
There's no way I'm getting up then.
But
really.
Having, you know, because you're all lazy bones
that's
people
right.
who don't want to get up in the morning.
Right. When is
sleep
someone in line behind us?
I will, why don't you take 4 minutes
you're
of pee?
You're trying to take away my right to sleep
why
here,
don't
Robert?
You?
Don't tell people
I
my
won't,
bones are lazy.
Free radio will take away your right to sleep. There's no
I
sleep.
I can't sleep here. I
there's
know that.
No sleeping in the studio. You're
so
going to get.
So this is another privatized enterprise?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It's against the, I guess it's the lease or whatever the fuck it is.
No, but, it's a law, too.
No, this is a residence. You could sleep in a residence.
Not in this room. It's
only so many heads.
Well, that's
room.
Not the law.
Only
that's
so
the,
many
that's
heads
the lease.
Structure.
That's the lease, not the law. This is a residence. This entire building is a residence.
Correct, but this is not a habitable.
Let's not argue. But you've only got 6 minutes left in the show. So, what would you two like to say? Linda, you've been in the studio longer, so let's give this smartly bearded individual who wandered in an opportunity to, unless you wanted to.
Well, we're going to continue with the appeal. We're going to, there. Gary has another appeal coming for, he got 2 years. For the same crime. It was a suspended sentence after he served 84 days. We're going to try to combine that one with the one that was just finished and skip this court system without appeal. because there will be no justice here, and these judges really aren't that good.
Can you skip a level? I don't know.
Yes, you can. We have two chances. We can ask them to allow us to move it on to the one in San Jose, and then we can ask San Jose to pull it up there. We have two chances to get to skip this level.
So what is that court called if we get it, when we get it to that level?
I think it's the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, a real Court of Appeals.
So all you legal eagles out there somehow think that this is, you know, a meaningful process of watching
every step of the way.
Is, you know, I mean, it's not that I mean, it's... It's okay to...
What were people saying to you, Robert? I noticed you had your free radio.
It's the magnitude of the injustice, of course, that I think we continue to try to focus on. But what we really want to do is see the kinds of pressure that, for example, John Colby has been able to put on the Homeless Lack of Services Center and Gone Lame, our mayor, by Lane. What he's done is he's made complaints to federal agencies, made demands, made demands through Public Records Act requests, took photos of people who have been kicked out of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, but who have disabilities.
Disabilities, bring in the feds.
Shown that when, exactly.
We're trying to get
and
to
so,
this.
And so that is a little different than sitting around waiting for some judge to go against the existing
Santa Cruz.
It's basically the same tactic. You're using one form of a government against another form.
It's not the same tactic at all because the federal government recently, for example, has actually come out stating that criminalization of poor people is an ineffective way. They would rather do their 180 for 180 or their, I don't know, housing for the homeless, or, you know, there are other approaches that various federal agencies are now pressing for. And that, along with the fact you've got the American Disabilities Act, is a way you can actually get at least social service agencies to respond. You might be able to get cities to respond.
Well, it's because they get their money
but
from
you're
the
not going to get it through the court system, usually, in my view.
I don't see the difference between John taking... an appeal
the
to
difference
an administrative
is,
agency
the
that
difference,
doesn't...
Linda, the difference is the next
you're not
day...
Letting me finish.
I'm not, because the next... Because we only have 4 minutes left.
Oh.
And the next day... next day, after a letter is filed, suddenly the Homeless Lack of Services Center changes its policy.
Oh, you
and,
think that's
and
the
Don,
solution?
And Don Lane says, it's all solved. No.
They didn't have a policy to change,
but
they still don't.
Linda, if the next day Judge Gallagher said... we won't change the policy, but there's been a problem. Gary, you don't have any sentence anymore. It's all been annulled. That would be a real step forward, even if he didn't make a policy change broadly. So you're not getting the kind of action from the courts that you're getting via this other process.
Well, this is also,
I disagree fundamentally.
You're only talking
well,
about
well, she's wrong. I want everybody
center.
To know that.
If
I'm right, and she's
heard
wrong.
On appeal, at the state level, it affects everyone in the state. The trouble is, a lot of these lawyers, like in L.A. and San Diego, settle. So the changes only occur in those cities. We want to make a change, you know, statewide.
Well, we only have actually 3 minutes left, and Free is going to be returning, perhaps sleepwalking in here at 9:30 in the morning.
I'm not coming in on Sunday.
And maybe he'll call in. Who knows? We can hear more.
Maybe he'll
yeah, again, you know, I know, Free, you have this passionate faith in the courts at some point.
No.
You don't have that faith in the courts to consider it one of a set of responses.
I just get real tired of hearing as though, oh, we can take it up to the high. I know. I've heard. Oh, I was listening.
No, they're going to try.
All right. We got to go. I'm sorry. I know.
They're going to try and refuse to hear it. I know that.
I'm saying that I wish we had more time, because then I could let you two talk on and I could go to the bathroom.
Oh, we'll keep this up even after your listeners are gone.
No doubt. Anyway, for those who are interested, there is a free Radio Santa Cruz benefit tomorrow, and that is happening at 6 o'clock at the Resource Center for Nonviolence.
Get there early; must close at 10.
And it's $10 bucks.
12 Ocean Street.
I don't know. Is it $10 in a sliding scale, or is it just $10, or is it donation?
Bring as much as you can. Yeah.
And I think there's stuff coming up. Becky Johnson is going into a pretrial along with Gabriella Ripley Phipps for the Santa Cruz 11. That's going to be happening on the 25th of June. There's actually, I'm going to turn down because I really want to be able to finish this stuff. Sorry. No, it's just you're interrupting a lot, and I can't quite finish. And I don't have much time, so I'm going to do that. And I want to thank you all for listening to Free Radio. I will be coming back on Sunday, maybe, if I get up. And, you know, you can get in touch with me if you want stuff on the air that you think you're not getting or you perhaps getting too much of. You can give me a call at 423-4833. That's the Huff line. You can also be advised that I will be having some of the victims of the Homeless Lack of Services Center on the air 9:30 in the morning, who were the victims of the policies, of the throw-em-out policies of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And supposedly, the next day change policies by Mayor Gon Lehm. And you'll hear... your mics are down. You'll hear Linda and...
never turn down.
You'll hear Linda. You're quite a man, Free. And you can tune into Free Show on Tuesday from 6 to 9, and you can chat with him, and he presumably won't turn down your mic. But that's pretty much it. It is 8 o'clock, so I'm going to have to pretty quickly turn over the mic to Uncle Dennis Davey, assuming...
Who is not here.
Who is not here, strangely. He usually comes in at this, actually 5 minutes before time. Could be he's gallivanting around in some other state. In fact, I think he actually is. But he generally gets pretty cranky if I don't put on one of his endlessly repeated old recycled shows, so... Well, I think I will be doing that. I will also be going to the district court tomorrow. I'll be going to the district court tomorrow on Friday. I agree with you. However, I think that the attorneys are making a lot of money, so they're enjoying it very nicely. There you go. All righty. Hi there. You're on Free Radio with the Babbling Gang here.
Oh, Robert, I'll be there in a minute. I'm stuck in traffic.
You're stuck in... Well, then we will be continuing to quibble and quabble for the next 10 minutes. Please get here soon. I'm at my wit's end with this gang of ne'er-do-wells. See you soon.
Gang of ne'er-do-wells.
What did you say, hang up?
No, I think... Well, so in any case, we have a few minutes, so if you... So, as I was saying, tomorrow there's going to be... For those who are following the case... years ago, I was falsely arrested at city council in their attempt to crack down on dissenting activity there. They never took me to court on any of that stuff on criminal charges, so I took them to court, and the case has been bouncing around for 10 years in court. And, of course, this is a case, because attorneys can make money off it, quite different than anything Free has been talking about, which has to do with the criminal cases of people who are being prosecuted for homeless stuff. That, of course,
money,
it doesn't matter. They don't care. That's my response to Free off to the distance there. But that's the reason, you know, that...
Turn down my mic, but you can't
show me
that.
That's for sure. So anyway, I guess I have a lot of... There's some interesting interviews that should be coming up in the next show. It'll be a long show unless I sleep through it, in which case...
Perhaps, sure, it's not on county property.
Perhaps you'll hear some other stuff. And I think I'm going to turn on some... some music. Linda, you want to say something? You want to say something? Go ahead.
Yeah. I think it might prove important. I understand that on the 26th of this month, at City of Santa Cruz City Council meeting, there may be something coming back, whatever remains of it, based on a press release that three city council members set up, having to do with trying to be repressive with homeless people and refusing the City of Santa Cruz to allow any more shelters to come here. And some other outrageous and equally not thought through claims. I'm sure you've talked about it on your show. Anyway, that might be on the agenda.
Who says?
Your friend Don Lane. On the 26th. If they have it ready.
Did you and Don have one of your private confabs?
It wasn't private. Monica was there.
When was this?
Yesterday.
You weren't invited.
And tell me.
The meeting. He wouldn't have gone. What?
What kind of a meeting was it?
Well, yeah, do you know I'm on the Homelessness Action Partnership, a countywide board that is predominantly nonprofit service providers for homeless people. And that board.